Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
Well, Andy Williams tells us it's the most wonderful time of the year. And if you love good singing, it really is. Here in Minnesota, the season is filled with great holiday concerts. And for our guest today, the ensemble singers from Vocal Essence, led by Philip Brunel, it's at least the most busy time of year. I'm Tom Cranon. For the next hour here on Minnesota Public Radio News, I may be the most lucky guy in Minnesota because I get to spend the next hour with Philip and some of the best singers in the state with some glorious Christmas music and maybe an interesting surprise. And I use that word in the Minnesota sense. So you're as lucky as I am because you're right here with me in the Maud Moon Weyerhaeuser Music Studio as we welcome the ensemble singers from Vocal Essence and Philip Brunel. Welcome and thanks for coming. Yes. It's great to have you here, and let's welcome Christmas, to borrow a phrase. Vocal Essence, Philip Brunel leading them in. That's the way the Ceremony of Carols by Benjamin Britten opens. Welcome, Yule, and it's great to have you here. In your midst of you, as we record this, your welcome Christmas frenzy that you're
absolutely
in.
We do, of course.
Now, that piece is from the 1940s, mm-hmm. And it's written for high voices, often women, sometimes boys, mm-hmm. and harp. Mm-hmm. And it's become an international staple because on the BBC they play that when they play the King's College Choir lessons and carols, usually internationally. And as I listen to this next piece, which you first performed back in 1992, I said to myself, well, that has a similarity in tone and in sound. And when I asked you about it, you said, that is not accidental, is it?
It isn't, because when I asked Conrad Susa, I said, you are the American composer who can write a comparative piece that would go with Britten's Ceremony of Carols, which is for treble voices. And I would like something for soprano, alto, tenor, bass, and harp. And 6 months later, even though I usually had to nudge him, he came up with this piece, which he said, I hope you don't mind, but I kept the harp, but I added the guitar, and I added the vibes and marimba. And he said, therefore, I took Mexican carols, and I'm calling it Carols from the Southwest, and we had this delightful piece, which has now become, in this country, a staple.
And you were the first to perform it, right?
Absolutely. We recorded it, we performed it, and I thought it's time to bring this back because it's just a wonderful bit of festive music for the holiday season.
And we're going to hear December, and then another piece which imitates what we do for babies, newborn babies, coochie coochie coo, right?
It's the Mexican equivalent of coochie coochie coo, as a matter of fact, right? And the first one is about how December flies away when suddenly the birth of Jesus happens in Bethlehem.
All right. Well, let's hear two from the suite Carols and Lullabies, Christmas in the Southwest by Conrad Susa, written in 1992 for Philip Brunel and Vocal Essence.
buscas mentira.
Abre dentro as coronas,
todo el mundo admira. Fala no jardim do amor, deixa na divina flor.
Una rosa,
una rosa,
una rosa,
una rosa,
una rosa bella,
facunda e consiglia.
Conrad Sousa's music, written in the 1990s for Philip Brunel and Vocal Essence, whose ensemble singers are here in the studio with me here on Minnesota Public Radio News Today. And we just heard two from a suite of carols and lullabies. Christmas in the Southwest, that last one, Chikididididi, how do you actually pronounce that?
Chikodikitin.
Chikodikitin.
Si.
And that is Kuchikuchiku.
Kuchiku, yes, right.
So for the newborn baby.
Exactly.
Conrad Sousa, when he wrote that music, said that he felt some pressure to come up with a hit, that you wanted him to write a hit. Has it become a Christmas hit for him?
A huge hit. It is done by choral societies and colleges and churches all across the United States. And people really love just the feeling about it. And people who are Mexican who have heard this, I have had the experience of them say, oh, that's from my childhood. These are old favorite carols that I grew up with knowing.
Now, and they have a wonderful sound, too, in the performance and recording. It's marimba, mm-hmm. harp, and guitar, right?
Exactly.
With the choir. It's important, I think, every year for you to do something new, and you have fostered something new for Christmas in the way of a brand new carol and also commissioning new pieces. And this is by St. Paul composer Steve Heitzig. First, before we talk about the music, why is that important to add to the Christmas tradition or canon every year?
Well, it seems to me that it's important to have Christmas be something that ever is new, that it's not we have to have only things that are from 200 years ago. I love those,
right,
and I want them. But I also want to be able to say, but there's new things, and give a chance to composers who are living today to have a chance to write something for choirs so that people realize it's old and at the same time it's new. And this piece by Steve Heitzig is one that he just called me up and said, may I write a piece for you? It was not commissioned. It was simply, it appeared. And I said, Steve, I know your work. We've sung many of your pieces. Absolutely, please.
And I think his music has a peaceful quality about it. Is that evident here, too?
Very much, yes, yeah.
All right, Little Carol of Hope, brand new music. Music from this past year by Steve Heitzig. Lives right here in St. Paul, works here in the Twin Cities, and his music is performed everywhere, including right here in the Maud Moon Weyerhaeuser Music Studio by the Ensemble Singers of Vocal Essence and Philip Brunel. It's called The Little Carol of Hope and a message of hope and peace at this season. Who wrote the text to that? It's gorgeous.
He wrote the same. It was one of those where I have to tell you that oftentimes words and music by the same person don't work. They are either one part of it is great and the other part less so. But Steve is one of those who can combine the two together and make it work both in the words and in the music.
And that's serene, and as I heard in the accompaniment, especially in the piano, a Copeland-esque hint, right? You get that wide-open American
much.
Sound.
Yeah. Yes, yes.
Well, nice stuff, brand new, and we'll continue in that vein now with the Carol Contest. But first, here is the time where we get the official definition of a Christmas carol from Philip Brunel. This has become the yearly tradition because we call everything from Deck the Halls to Jingle Bells to Hark the Herald Angels Sing Christmas carols. But they're not all carols.
They are not. There are Christmas carols and there are Christmas hymns. The easiest way to think about it is that a carol originally was a piece that was sung danced. And okay. So you were in a circle and it was a livelier tempo. So you were standing or dancing in a circle and you would sing. So if you think about it, something like Hark the Herald Angels Sing doesn't really fit itself to dancing in a circle.
Right.
No,
okay.
That would be called a hymn.
Okay.
It's more straightforward.
Yeah.
And yet something...
So you want a lilt to it.
Like the First Noel is a carol. Jingle Bells is a carol.
Oh,
you know,
okay.
So, it's
yeah.
pieces. But now the word in modern times has become more casual. And so, for instance, this next carol, it mm-hmm. is a carol, but I'm not sure anyone would dance Adam Lay Abounden. Well, mm-hmm. maybe a few of our folks, but, you know, not everybody. And but it's that kind of... It's a different, but carols basically were that kind of more up-tempo and more festive kind of piece.
Now, you do a competition every year. You've done
every
this
year.
Since, what, 98 it started?
It's almost 20 years now that
yeah.
we've had a different instrument each year. And this year, the instrument is the vibraphone.
Okay.
So I've asked Jessica to make her piano sound like a vibraphone here today. And we will have these two carols. One of them was written by local composer Lee Blasky, and the other one, the one we're going to do, is by a composer from Kansas City who took this old text, Adam Lay Abounden, and set it with vibraphone and singers.
How many entries do you get every year?
Depends on the instrument, but
yeah.
usually somewhere between 50 and 150.
Wow. And
depends.
What time of year are you going through them?
The contest ends at the end of August,
yeah.
and then we start in to decide. So Philip Schultz and I decide, and certainly by the middle of September, we know who the winners are going to be.
Okay.
Right.
And is your head most of the year in Christmas music at some point?
This would be true.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
There's
yes.
no time away from it for
no.
you.
And I am perfectly happy with
that. I was going to say, you don't mind that, do you?
I love Christmas music. I mean, I love all kinds of music, but I love Christmas music. So I'm perfectly happy to think about it 12 months of the year.
So as you're going through these in August, what about this one by Sean Sweden popped out and you said, oh, this is a good one?
Well, what you're looking for is something interesting for the singers and also something that makes sense for the instrument of that year. Because some people don't know how to write for the instrument, or they write a part that's not playable because those notes don't exist on the instrument.
Oh, right.
You know?
Yeah.
And or they'll write something for singers that is not doable, you know, where they're asking the soprano to sing high Z, you know, right? And he's like, no, we don't own that note, thank you. You know, so, I mean, you have to kind of look at
it. Sit well for the voices.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then you see, is it really musical? And is it something that you feel will have a life, my hope, a life beyond the premiere? Because my goal is that these pieces every year get sung in other parts of the United States and around the world.
And go out into the world.
Exactly.
Have legs.
Right.
Feet. Yeah. All right, let's hear this year. Sean Sweden, this is Adam Lay Abounden, which is an old English text, right?
Winter, for
Brand new music by Sean Sweden. He is one of the winners of the Vocal Essence Carol competition for this year. And the text for this has been set by other composers, Adam Leigh Ebounden. You can tell it's probably earlier Middle English, very old stuff, right?
Absolutely. Medieval. Sort of from the time of Chaucer.
And boy, that tells the story and takes us from expectation and Advent all the way to the joy of Christmas morning, doesn't it?
It does. And, you know, hundreds and hundreds of composers have set that text. So it's fascinating to me that hundreds more still want to set that text, you know.
What do you think it is about the story, the Christmas story, that has attracted so many composers to set these texts and this story?
I think it's the mystery around the season. I think it's also the tenderness around the season. And I think it's the joy around the season. And I think they find these and they find one that really makes sense to them and take it and run with it.
And that one has all three.
It has all
three.
It
does, doesn't it?
It definitely does, right.
There was an album years ago, a record album, you'll remember, Robert Shaw, The Many Moods of Christmas.
I have it.
Yeah, it was famous. And these big choral suites, but really they're trying to get at that. Because we think of generally Christmas joyful, but it really does have that mystery and longing and tenderness, certainly Advent does.
Absolutely. And when you combine Advent and Christmas, that really makes it work.
Another winner from the Vocal Essence Carol Contest, Philip Brunel and the Ensemble Singers of Vocal Essence are here with me in the Maud Moon Weyerhaeuser Music Studio for what has become an annual tradition here, and there's nothing like a tradition at the holidays, so we're happy to have you as one of our holiday traditions, and we're happy to share it with you as well. This year, as part of the Welcome Christmas Concerts, which you've been doing now for how many years? I always forget.
Decades.
Decades, exactly.
That's the
See, this
way.
Is the easiest way, and we don't quite know. It goes back so far, right?
Well, it goes way back, and in the earliest years when I did it, one year I thought, oh, people in December don't really want to hear Christmas music all month long. Wrong, they do. And I therefore
I can't believe
one
you would have
year,
thought that at some point.
Well, so one year at Orchestra Hall, we did Honegger's oratorio, Joan of Arc at the Stake.
Mm.
And
that'll pack him in. Cheer him right up at Christmas.
Right. So people came and they couldn't figure out what this had to do with Christmas. Because it had nothing to do with Christmas, and
so
we stopped doing that.
Yeah,
we moved to Christmas.
You moved to Christmas, and so here we are. And this year, for Welcome Christmas, you wanted to honor Alice Parker, who's a big name in the choral world. Tell me who she is and why she's so important. She's 90 this year.
She's 90 years old. She's just as peppy as you or I am. She's a very, very wonderful woman. She lives in Connecticut, and in the 40s and 50s, she teamed up with Robert Shaw to do hundreds of choral arrangements for choir that were Christmas, that were folk songs, every kind of possible song. And it seemed like since it's her 90th birthday year, we should celebrate that and do a little suite of several of Alice Parker's arrangements.
All right, and let's hear them.
Ce matin, j'ai rencontré le train de trois grands rois qui allaient en voyage. Ce matin, j'ai rencontré le train de trois grands rois déçus des grands chemins. Tout chargés pour les suivre d'abord, de grands guerriers.
trésor, tu charges d'or les suivez d'abord, de grands guerriers avec le bouclier.
Ce massacre,
I saw three ships come sailing in on Christmas Day in the morning.
And what was in those ships all three on Christmas Day, on Christmas Day? And what was in those ships all three on Christmas Day in the morning?
Our Savior Christ and His Lady on Christmas Day, on Christmas Day. Our Savior Christ and His Lady on Christmas Day in the morning.
Prepare the sail,
those
ships, all three, on Christmas Day, on Christmas Day. Prepare the sail, those ships, all three, on Christmas Day in the morning.
Oh, they sailed into Bethlehem on Christmas Day, on Christmas Day. Oh, they sailed into Bethlehem on Christmas Day in the morning. And all the souls on earth shall sing on Christmas Day, on Christmas Day. And all the souls on earth shall sing on Christmas Day in the morning.
Then let us all rejoice amid on Christmas Day, on Christmas Day. Then let us all rejoice amid on Christmas Day in the morning.
Philip Brunel and Vocal Essence with a tribute to the arranger of those two Christmas tunes we know, The March of the Kings and I Saw Three Ships, Alice Parker. And it has that full choral sound.
It
right?
certainly does. Yeah. Alice knows how to do it and is still doing it. She's still composing.
I was looking on your website and I saw some research. This is I have to dig into some research here and about choral singing, choral music. And we've talked about the importance here in Minnesota. But a group called Chorus America has found the following, and I want to ask you how this is possible. People who sing in choruses demonstrate characteristics that make them remarkably good citizens. This looks like a pretty good group here of good citizens, people who obey the law and vote and drive in the lines and all of that. But tell me why that's the case.
Well, I think there's a couple of things about just beyond good citizenship. I think the fact that people who sing, first of all, singing is the only instrument that exists that you cannot see. It is the instrument inside you. So it makes, when you are singing, you're having to express from inside your body. And it's the only instrument that also uses text. And so you add the whole idea of communicating with people through words, whether they're sad, whether they're happy, whatever the mood is, you have that going. But the other thing with singing is that, yes, sometimes it's solo, but right. other times, as in a group like the Ensemble Singers, you are working together. So part of it is listening to each other. Part of it is the teamwork of singing together so that it really is a beautiful blend and it's all of one. And I think those kind of senses of cooperation. So one thing I say every year about the Ensemble Singers, when they must re-audition every year, and I always say, you are hired 50% for the beauty of your voice and 50% for the beauty of your personality. Because if you don't have the personality to make it work, this won't happen. It can't happen. And so I think that's what makes citizenship and everything else about it. And they're also fascinating people.
There you go. You look pretty fascinating.
They are. They are. Yes.
But there is that that aspect in that you want a group effort, a blended sound, the sound that you want, and yet you want good individual singers. How do you walk that line and not have, 16, 18 soloists all competing for attention?
I think as much
not
as...
Not that would happen here. But
no. I think as much as you can, it's about communication. It's about trying to express what I feel an individual piece needs. Maybe it's about how you express the text. Maybe it's about the mood that you need to bring to the music. And so I think, you know, it's about how you communicate so that they know what it is. And sometimes I will do it through words that it wouldn't be like saying, sing this more in a harsh way. I might say, sing it as if you're eating a sugar cube.
Okay. And you have to be able to translate that.
What does that mean?
Yeah.
What does that? And it's fascinating to see what they would think about singing it like that. You know, that's the great thing about singing, because you have so many possibilities, and the whole uniqueness of the voice is something that has fascinated me since I was 3 years old as a boy soprano myself and started out.
Now, this connection to citizenship, once again, Minnesota led the nation in voter turnout this last election, and that has happened many cycles. Also, Minnesota has been a strong hotbed, if you will, of choral singing.
Absolutely.
Connection there?
Well, the fact is that, of course, a lot of it had to do, I think, initially with the immigrants who came to Minnesota. They came from countries that had a choral tradition, mm-hmm. and they arrived here, and it was like, you know, if I'm going to keep that tradition going, I have to do it myself. And so we have just, you know, hundreds upon hundreds, thousands actually. We think of this as the state of 10,000 choirs.
Mm-hmm.
And people around the country refer to Minnesota as choral country. And it's absolutely true.
And Philip Brunel would be the governor, I suppose, of choral country, right, should we say?
We want to think that we are in a role of some kind of help.
A leader, an official, as we would say on the
news,
of choral country, and we're happy you're here with us. And we move from Alice Parker now to you always bring from this file you must have in your office. You must have a drawer where
you said drawers, didn't you?
Yeah, drawers.
Right. No. Yes.
These are Christmas songs from the drawer. And this is the drawer of ones that don't quite make the cut for public performance, but we're going to put them on the radio.
Absolutely. No, I have many, many pieces of Christmas music that would never show up on a vocal lessons concert, mm-hmm. but they're perfect for Tom Cran and Minnesota Public Radio.
Oh, there you go. Well, you thanks. I appreciate that.
Probably will never hear these again.
if we're lucky.
This would be a good example of that because, you know, this is a Caribbean song, mm-hmm. But, you know, you don't often see a tempo marking that says moderately slow Caribbean groove. Right.
Okay. That is not, no, you don't often have that on your...
Believe me, you don't.
Alice Parker scores.
Right. And so, therefore, this little piece with a really bad text and a very kind of, you know, unusual little Caribbean music background to give it that kind of flavor.
Calypso. And, well, this was a craze for a while, right?
It was.
Calypso,
it was
certainly.
Indeed.
I mean, it's an indigenous form, and then it became a craze in the U.S., Harry Belafonte and all, right?
And this one is called Santa Claus on the Coconut Tree.
All right. Well, let's hear this.
But our little island Santa never forget. He bring us all gifts from his corporate jet. But this Christmas Eve, oops, he run out of gas. Santa got a bailout mighty fast. Plane and presents splash into the sea. Presents land on a coconut tree.
Santa Claus on the coconut tree. Waving. So merrily, Christmas morning, what a sight to see. Santa Claus on the coconut tree.
Everyone come and bring a rope. Bring lots of bananas and cantaloupe. Pile them below just in case he fall off. At least he's gonna land on something soft. Boys, scramble up, climb, hippity-hop. Tie the rope tight round the coconut top. Everybody pull, but the tree don't bend. We'll take a little rest and try again.
Santa Claus on the coconut tree, waving and smiling so merrily. Christmas morning, what a sight to see. Santa Claus on the coconut tree.
Lift up a papaya and shrimp from the sea. Send good old Santa sweet cinnamon tea. Give him straw hat with shells on the brim. This is the Christmas we give presents to him.
Santa Claus on the coconut tree, waving and smiling so merrily. Christmas morning, what a sight to see. Santa Claus on the coconut tree. Santa Claus on the coconut tree. Coconut tree!
I think Santa's ready for, what, a pina colada after that,
I think,
right?
So, yeah. Definitely.
After that mishap. Now, a tale of a Santa mishap there, Santa Claus and the Coconut Tree. Do we know when that's from and who wrote it?
In the 1950s,
yeah,
you know,
right.
That whole era when they were doing, trying to expand the feeling of Santa Claus and giving him a presence in other parts of the world,
yeah,
especially
right.
on coconut trees. The one song that I have not been able to find, which years ago I heard, and if someone has it, I'd love it. It's called Rudolph Visits the Manger.
And oh, wow. Interesting.
And it was about when Rudolph came into the manger and his red nose lit up the manger, and then his nose nestled Jesus in the manger.
It's a blend of sacred and secular there.
It
taking
is.
All the Christmas stories in one.
I've lost it.
Yeah.
I used to have it. So if anybody has it, please, Rudolph Visits the Manger. Mm.
Since we don't have that, we have another from this drawer of yours of Christmas songs that don't make the cut. I'm thinking again of Leonard Pinth-Garnell. It was the Dan Aykroyd character on Saturday Night Live way back. And he did very bad ballet and bad theater, right? And so we have another very bad Christmas song that Philip has brought us. Tell me about this one.
Well, this one is taking a familiar old carol and writing a new set of words,
right,
but also doing it sometimes in major, but sometimes in minor, so that they will all recognize the melody. It's just that this little piece, which is all about Santa retiring from going around at Christmas
time. Can't do it forever, right?
You'll see.
Okay.
That Santa has retired. urgent telegram for NPR listeners.
Very dramatic and a fully committed dramatic performance here by the ensemble singers of Vocal Essence and Philip Brunel. And it's good to know Santa still, he's probably the last guy to send a telegram. Doesn't he have text ability, SMS capability on that phone of his?
Now he does, but yeah. Back when this was composed, he did not.
And there, once again, last year you brought us one sung to the Tannenbaum tune, mm-hmm. and then we get another one this year. What is it about that tune that is ripe for the parodists?
Because it's very easy to parody. It's very simple. It's short. It's in 3/4 time. Dee-dum, da-dum, bum-bum, ba-dum. Dee-dee-dee-dee, doot-doot-doot. It's very simple.
You can make up the words pretty easily.
No, you really can.
Philip Brunel is here with us. The ensemble singers of Vocal Essence are in the Maud Moon Weyerhaeuser Music Studio. And as always, Philip brings a Christmas song, a carol. Would that actually be a carol officially?
That would have been a carol.
It would,
because people would have danced around the Tannenbaum, you know? Sure.
Exactly. And from that drawer that you must, it must be quite a thing to see that drawer of your novelty and bad carols.
It's actually several files of music. It's not one drawer.
Okay. Mm-hmm. From there we go to Malcolm Dalgliesh, and people might be familiar with him from his work as a folk musician, Celtic musician, plays the dulcimer, right? And I didn't know that he wrote work for a chorus as well.
He wrote this piece actually several years ago for the St. Olaf College Choir Christmas Festival. And so when it came to my mind, because one of our singers here today, Judith Melander, said, you know, you ought to look at this and you ought to think about hammered dulcimer as an instrument to involve. And so it seemed like a good idea. And so we have a little Appalachian carol that really fits, and it's beautiful with the hammered dulcimer.
And it fits in that vein of his work, too, that folk and...
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, let's hear this. This is called Brightest and Best.
And it opens with a kind of a fanfare from the soprano soloist, Joanna, and then the choir comes right in with the old words, Brightest and Best.
Star of the East,
Brightest and Best by Malcolm Dalgleish, who is, I think, is well known for his folk music and playing the dulcimer, his Appalachian and Celtic music, and he certainly brings that to that. I want to go back to the music that you would have heard at a Brunel Christmas at home when you were a kid. Now, you started singing very young. You said you were a boy soprano at the age of what?
Three.
Three, okay.
Because I had to sing The Holy City, which was my calling card, of course. And then also there were some Christmas songs that I had to do. And, of course, when we moved from Austin, Minnesota, up here, then I had to learn Swedish songs like Barna True when I went to the Ebenezer home and other places where the Swedes were located.
And so would that have been in your house, in your background? Anyone spoke Swedish, parents or grandparents?
No one.
No one.
No.
Okay.
No,
so
we
you
did
had
not
to pick
come
that
from
up.
That tradition at all. Uh-huh. But I always got, I mean, the first Christmas program that I really remember, I was six, and my mother took me in Austin, Minnesota, to hear Handel's Messiah, big chorus, orchestra, all of that. And after the performance was over, I remember just saying to her, you know what I really want for Christmas more than anything is a vocal score of Messiah. And I wasn't aware at the time that this was not a common request of six-year-olds,
right, uh-huh,
you know,
right.
But I got it. And I still have that old G. Shermer score. And then I got busy and started memorizing it. And so if you need
did
a party...
Did you conduct along to the phonograph record
oh, sure,
at all?
Sure, of
did
course,
you?
And
yeah,
sang.
Yeah,
and if
yeah.
you, so if you ever have a party and you want someone to sit at the piano by memory and play for 3 hours Messiah, call me.
All right,
you know,
you're the guy.
I'll do it,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And what about Christmas songs, records you'd put on, or just was there caroling in the neighborhood or at church? Or
well, the other record in those early days was we had the 78 records of Lionel Barrymore reciting Dickens' Christmas Carol.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Which I memorized, of course, uh-huh. And which was great on road trips with your children for them to hear once.
And did you do that? Did you
yes.
play it once?
But after
okay.
once, then they said, Dad, we've heard that. We don't need it again. Right. So we did. But there were just, you know, lots of Christmas music. We sang around on Christmas morning. We always gathered by the piano and sang some songs. My father being a minister, we had a little Christmas service before we opened the gifts. So
okay.
And then, of course, it took a kind of an unusual turn because when I was 13... that was the year on Christmas morning that we finished our little service, and about 5 seconds later, my father died in front of us.
Oh, my goodness.
Just had a heart attack.
On Christmas
and died.
Day?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my goodness.
And I guess life goes on, and left my mom with five little kids. And but it was never in the future like, oh, dear, Christmas is here. No, we always, yeah. we have remembered the good things about Christmas and went on from there.
For some, that would mark their Christmas, that would have, because there is that dark part of Christmas for many people, mm-hmm. right? But not for you.
No, we didn't. We celebrated the good parts of it and always have.
Last year, I asked you if you had, through all the Christmas music, a real favorite. No surprise that you didn't do the old, oh, it's also wonderful, I couldn't pick a favorite. You picked a favorite.
I did. I chose this one of Peter Warlock.
Yeah.
Because I just think it's a great rousing one, not just for Christmas, but for the new year. And Peter Warlock wrote wonderful melodies. He was a kind of a crazy guy, but he wrote some beautiful things. I love singing his Bethlehem Down, which is a gorgeous piece. He wrote a number of solo pieces. And then he wrote this one, which is piano and unison voices for New Year, called What Cheer? Good Cheer.
And it is just this lusty, cheerful thing, isn't it? Yeah.
And Mary and Mary.
Be merry and glad this good new year. Peter
Absolutely.
Warlock's What Cheer, Good Cheer, a favorite of Philip Brunel and the Ensemble Singers. This is such a treat for me to be able to sit and listen to you and share it with our listeners from the Maude Boone Weyerhaeuser Music Studio. And I just want to thank you all for coming in. I know it's a very busy time of year, and you have provided us, as you do year after year, with great cheer. So thank you very much. And we're going to continue in a similar cheerful vein. Tell us what we're going to go out on here, Philip.
This is a wonderful spiritual called What Month Was Jesus Born In? There are not a lot of arrangements of this particular spiritual, but it's such a happy, great piece, and David Morrow, the conductor of the Morehouse College Glee Club, made this arrangement, and I thought it was the perfect way. So in our concerts, it has become the closer.
What month was Jesus born in?
Born in the last month of the year.
September, October, and November. It was the 25th day of December. It was the last month in the year.
He was born in an ox stall manger.
Philip Brunel and the Ensemble Singers from Vocal Essence. Thanks also to pianist Jessica Hall, our accompanist today, and our engineer in the Maude Boone Weyerhaeuser Music Studio, Michael DeMarc. I'm Tom Cran with all the best for the holidays.
October and November. It was the 25th day of December. It was the last.